You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Ooh.
Name that tune. Oh, this is Journey. What are you, crazy?
There you got some of your
separate
classic
ways.
There you go. The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. We get a chance to talk some baseball now with a man who covers it for ESPN.com. He's with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. He is David Schoenfeld. David, how are you, man?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Let's get into that absolute debacle that took place today. The owner of the Houston Astros has got to be one of the more tone-deaf individuals that could possibly walk the earth, considering he had weeks and weeks and weeks to prepare for this. He's the one that said, hey, we're going to have the players apologize and we're going to take care of this. And then Jim Crane comes out here like a complete buffoon and says, well, I don't think it impacted the game. And then a minute later says, I didn't say that. I mean, could he have handled this worse?
Yeah, I guess I'm a realist. I didn't have high expectations for what would happen today. Yeah, Jim Crane was a joke. The players, when they read their statements initially, that was a joke. At least when they went back into the clubhouse and talked like normal human beings, at least they did apologize a little more there and showed a little contrition. I'd give overall, though, is about a D- I would give the team for what happened today. I don't know how much the lawyers behind the scenes, because there is this lawsuit that former pitcher has filed. I don't know if that technically would affect what they could say, but what did we expect them to say, I guess, would be the realistic answer.
Oh, so somebody filed. Tell us a little bit about the nature of that lawsuit that was filed.
I think it's kind of a joke. It was a former pitcher named Mike Bolsinger. I think he was with Toronto at the time. And the last game he pitched in the majors was against Houston that year. And he gave up 6 runs in 2-1 inning or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And he never pitched again. So, I don't know the details of the suit. There's some legal, work related, language in there. And he wants the Astros to donate all their World Series shares, $31 million worth, I think it is, to children's charities. None of that's going to happen, right? But it is a lawsuit, so if you're involved in it, you have to be aware that what you say can be potentially used in that. So maybe that restrained a little bit some of the language, that we heard today.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, David. Rob Manfred, I feel like he has not gotten out in front of this, and how much do you put on him? Because I'm thinking of, there's nothing worse that's happened anyway that's been more of a cheat than this. I mean, steroids, gambling on games is certainly very severe, but this is a big one as far as, leveling the playing field, fair play, everything. And I feel like he should have gotten the, Major League Baseball together, gotten everybody together and said, hey man, we got to get in front of this and we got to figure this out because, there's lots of worry about the popularity of baseball, for the younger crowds. And to me, it was just a huge deal. And he didn't seem to, it didn't seem like he rallied the troops or anything like that.
No, and I think that's the most disappointing aspect of everything is going back to 2017 when the Red Sox were initially fined for, using the Apple Watches, and they sent out new guidelines after that, but clearly they just sent the memos and didn't follow up and make sure teams were following along. Now last season, there were apparently MLB personnel in the replay room, so teams, that's how Houston was cheating, how the Red Sox were supposedly doing it in 2018, but why did it take 2 years to get to that level where you were monitoring what teams were doing during the game, and that led to, what's going on now, and now they got into such a hole. I think Manfred's whole goal here was to stamp this out as quickly as possible, wrap up this investigation. There's still the one going on the Red Sox. We'll hear the results of that soon. And then that's it, and hoping that's the end of it. But we know this is not the end of it.
David, what do you think the season will be like for the Astros? Because I know that when they're on the road, everybody's going to be razzing them and booing them and calling them cheaters and that type of thing. But I'm just wondering about the field of play with the possibility that pitchers are throwing at them. You think Manfred will really crack down hard on that if it happens?
That's a really good question. I know I was in the office yesterday, ESPN. That was what we were talking about. You know, I heard people on MLB Network. That's what they were talking about. The former players, they didn't seem to have any clue what might happen. But, you know, seeing and hearing some of the responses from players around the league, they are ticked off. I mean, way more ticked off than whatever happened in the steroids era. Now, I get that because so many players were using steroids, and this is a little more isolated. But players are angry, you know, and there had been rumors about the Astros, you know, for the past 3 years. So I think we're going to see some high and tight stuff to Houston. Maybe not in spring training. Maybe it'll happen in the regular season. I don't know, but I think we're going to see a few incidents for sure.
What do you think of that comparison when people bring up steroids and trying to compare which is worse? Because I look at this and say, you know what? This is a coordinated effort amongst the entire team, and it goes beyond just the players. It goes into the front office, and we're hearing all these different stories about people that aren't out there on the field that are involved with it. I mean, everybody's in cahoots, whereas – yeah, guys did steroids. I'm not justifying that at all, but a lot of times it was an individual thing that some of the guys in the clubhouse probably didn't know or maybe suspected but didn't know for sure. Yeah, that was an individual taking initiative to do something that was against rules versus, hey, guys, this is planned code breaker, and here's how it works. Yeah. You know what I mean? That to me is so much worse.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's easier for us to understand why individual players would use steroids at the time when there was no testing. It was easy to get away with. There's a lot of money at stake, so on and so on. That we can understand. A lot of people do call it cheating, for sure. But this, I'm with you. What's hard to take is just the complete lack of integrity from top to bottom from an entire organization. And Jim Crane can sit there and say he didn't know what was going on. What? That's not an excuse, right? If you run the company or own the team, you know, you're the head of the show. All the way down, manager, players, front office, you know, the analytic interns who are coding the spreadsheet, everybody was involved. And look, this is, I think, kind of without getting too political here, this is a problem that permeates society. Win at all costs, throw all your morals and integrity out the door, because winning is all that matters. And hopefully everybody in the sport will learn something from this and play the game between the lines.
Well, and David, it seems like what most fans have an issue with is that the players involved pay no price. There's no penalty here.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we know about the immunity thing, which I feel like was a mistake, right, by the way, because you've got everybody who was perpetrating this outside of the coaches and GMs that have been fired, the actual players that are benefiting and perpetrating this, not 1 cent of a fine, not one game of a suspension, not one moment of penalty other than having to stand there and read a written out scripted apology. That's their punishment. I mean, that's absurd.
And I understand it. The tough thing is, you know, Manfred, he's in between a rock and a hard place there, because if you do that, then you have to deal with the union. And there's nothing in the CBA about what you can do if you're caught illegally stealing signs. So say you wanted that, we're going to suspend Jose Altuve for 2 months or half a season or whatever. Well, okay. The union's going to fire a grievance. It goes to an arbitrator. That could take years to resolve, you know, and that's the last thing Manfred wanted, is for this thing to drag on for years. So I don't know if he really had any other realistic option. I get it. Fans from the other 29 teams don't like it, but I don't know if he had a choice here.
All right, I guess, David, we need to get to the Mariners. Okay.
You're so happy about bringing up the Mariners.
Yeah, well, we'll be excited in a couple years. But I wonder.
A couple of years.
Listen, we talked to Justin Dunn. Have you talked to Justin Dunn, David?
I have, yeah. I had a good conversation with him at the Futures game last year. I really, real smart kid.
Oh, my gosh.
Good kid. You know, I hope he makes it.
Yeah, me too. So impressed by him. But Justice Sheffield, Justin Dunn, Justice Sheffield, you were talking about, who's going to round out the starting five. You think those two guys are going to occupy those two spots? You got Marco Gonzalez, Yusei Kikuchi, and Kendall Graveman.
Yeah, and they just signed Taiwan Walker, right? I don't know what his health is exactly. He's got a shot. I think Sheffield, for sure, he's been in the upper minors now for 3 years. It's time to run him out there and see if he's a major league pitcher. Dunn, I'd give him a couple months in AAA. He was at AA all of last season. We saw when he got called up in September, a little shaky. You can't read too much into that. It was only a few innings. Mm-hmm. I don't think a couple months in AAA would be the worst thing for him, but he should be up by June. You got to see what these kids have. You have no other option. Kendall Graveman, the guy hasn't really pitched in 3 years, right? We don't know what he has, So Sheffield and Dunn, they're the future. You got to see what they can do.
Hey, David, ESPN.com, you wrote a story, one stat for every Major League Baseball team. And for the Mariners, you had the number 67. That's the number the Mariners set an all-time record for players used in a season last year. And this sentence caught my attention here, David. This is no way to run a franchise, even in a rebuilding transitional, we're not trying to win season. Now, why is that? Explain yourself, David.
Well, I think it's ridiculous. The Mariners aren't the only team doing this, but the constant shuffling of the pitching staff, you call a guy up, he's got six innings to prove himself, or he's being sent back down, or he's putting on the waiver wire. That's no way to run a team. I remember back in the day when Lou Piniella was manager, and young pitchers would get called up, and they were so afraid of failing because they had a bad outing or two, Lou would run them out of town back to, AAA. Look, part of the reason is they don't know who they have, who's good, who's not good, but six innings doesn't show anything. So decide who you think is a major league pitcher. Give them a couple months. If they fail, give somebody else a shot.
Are you somebody that's fear? I think there's an apprehension here in Seattle because of how things turned out for Dustin Ackley and Zunino, and the idea that they were brought up too soon, and that impacts their development. And they were ruined. They were beaten down too early. I don't know if I buy that. Where are you at with? There are certain guys that will say, "Man, you need at least this number of at bats in the minor leagues before you bring them up." Where are you with timelines with young guys?
Yeah, it's a good question because teams have different philosophies on that. So spit that word out. The Mariners, they seem to rush guys. Tampa Bay is an example of a team that's very cautious on promoting players. They want to make sure that when they're ready to get the call to the majors, they're ready to contribute, not learn on the job. Ackley, he had a good rookie year, if I remember, and he kind of went downhill. So I don't think that was the problem with him. Zunino, he was always just going to be a guy that struck out too much. It had nothing to do with being rushed to the majors, and he was ready defensively. I just don't think they were as good as, their prospect status suggested. So it'll be interesting now with, Kelenic and Julio Rodriguez, who, are much more talented than Ackley and Zunino. Yeah, how quickly do you get them up to the majors? That'll be, with Kelenic kind of banging on the door. When does he get called up this year?
Yeah, the thing with Zunino, though, he did strike out a lot, but I thought there was a lot of his home runs that should have been worth two runs.
He didn't ever have a cheap home run.
I mean, there's few guys, if you threw a 92-mile-an-hour fastball down the middle, that could hit it further than Mike Zunino, that's for sure. But put a little wiggle on the ball, and he had trouble making contact.
Well, it's kind of funny to me, Dave, and I know I'm more of a football guy, certainly, but I just feel like just in life, you learn lessons by getting your butt kicked sometimes. And so, I guess that's smart scouting. Which guys can handle it and which can't, but it's always kind of a little bit odd to me that, that you're treating this player like he's fragile and we don't want him to, get shelled his first time out and maybe it's going to end up affecting him. I feel like that's how you get better in sports and in life.
Well, that's your old school approach is, call him up, And, yeah, maybe they take their lumps for a year, but how else are you going to learn? You know, and we're seeing across the league now, you know, players are getting up to the majors younger and younger, and they're performing. You know, Juan Soto, 20 years old. Carlos Correa was 20 when he got called up, and so on and so on. So, you know, these players are better than ever at a young age. You know, we all remember in Seattle when Ken Griffey Jr. was up at 19. Well, yeah, that was amazing at the time.
Yeah.
Now the league is full of 20 and 21-year-old all-stars, you know, so it's not that unusual anymore.
David, I've decided that I like you, and I don't even know you, and I'm just basing that on your Twitter.
Hey, I'm from Seattle. I grew up there. So.
Yeah, you're from Seattle, and your Twitter profile, you just got your two hounds there, pictures of your dogs there, so I appreciate that.
Doesn't take much to win Jim over.
No, it doesn't. If you're a dog guy, then, yeah, you're my kind of guy. But with the Mariners rebuild, are you skeptical, optimistic, or something in between?
I'd say in between. I mean, you know, this year's going to be rough, no doubt about it. They absolutely need to hit on Kelenic and Rodriguez. I mean, those guys need to be stars because I don't think anybody on the 40-man roster right now is a star. J.P. Crawford, maybe he's a good player. Shed Long, maybe he's a good player. But I don't think these are future, you know, all-stars. So they have a good farm system. They need to hit on all those guys.
What do you expect out of a guy like Mitch Haniger, who's still dealing with the repercussions of that injury that he suffered last year? He's not going to start the season, it doesn't look like. Kyle Seager, how do you view the veterans on this team? I mean, you got D. Gordon, you got Kyle Seager, and then Mitch to a lesser extent. Is it a matter of hoping these guys produce to a point where they become appealing to another team to trade for?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, the problem with Seager, third base is loaded across the majors, so I don't think there's that many teams that will need a third baseman. So even if Seager performs well, might be hard to trade him. Haniger, everybody can use an outfielder. So, yeah, if he comes back and, you know, hits like he did in 2018, certainly that's a good asset. But at that point, if he is performing well, hey, do you just keep them? We need somebody good on the team, right, for 2021 and 2022. So Seager, I think he's going to stay. Haniger, more 50-50, depending on how he plays.
You brought up 21 and 22, and I know Jerry originally laid out his plan saying they expected to be competitive in 20, which I think was wildly optimistic, and now it's 21, 22. What do you think is a realistic year where you say, all right, if they don't get to the postseason, this will be a disappointment? Which year would that be?
I mean, realistically, yeah, 2022. I mean, next year, I just don't see enough talent on the current team, and the talent you do have is all unproven. So you're going to go from probably a 100-loss team this year to the playoffs next year in a division that's better. The Angels, at least on paper, look a little better. Rangers look a little better. Astros, maybe they're falling down, you know. But I think 2022, you're going to have to dig into free agency. They will have a lot of financial flexibility, you know. So, yeah, you add a couple big free agents those, you know, next year and the year after. You know, you can start dreaming a little bit.
All right, David, who are you most excited to see? For me, it's Kelenic. I'm hearing these just ridiculous things about, you know, his workouts, and I think Scott Servais says the best workout I've ever seen, something like that. But who are you especially excited? Who are you going to tune in to keep track of on this team?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I talked to him at the Futures game. Another smart kid. Very confident, you know, which I think is a good thing. You know, I think his comment last summer was, I want to be in the majors now, you know. But, he's on all the top 10 prospect list, top 10 overall in the sport. No doubt he's the real deal. He's, you know, it's just a matter of how good is he going to be. I think he's going to be a star. Is he going to be, an annual all-star? You don't want to project that kind of level on anybody, but he's going to be a good player, no doubt, and I think he's the kind of player fans are going to love, you know, because he does have that confidence, which we all enjoy watching.
You still on board with Vogie?
Oh, man, what did he hit in the second half last year?
I think 160 or something like that.
That might be kind.
I mean, yeah, you got to give him another half a season, I think. But it's tough, you know. He's a DH only. He can't really even fake it, at first base with him. So he's got to hit to have a job. And even with home runs and walks, if you're hitting 210, that's hard to, make a living as a full-time DH with that number.
Yeah, nobody's looking for Vogie to walk and clog up the bases.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, no, this next guy behind him hits a two-run homer, right? But the second half was a little discouraging, no doubt.
This has been really uplifting talking to you today, David. I mean, the last line in your commentary about the Mariners, don't rule out this team playing down to the level of the Orioles and Tigers. And I'm looking, the Orioles lost 108 last year. 108 last year, and the Tigers 114.
I must have been in a bad mood when I was writing that. Hey, on the bright side, maybe seven teams will be in the playoffs by 2022, so that gives Seattle a better
there
chance.
Yep. Hey, last one before we let you go. Do you expect any changes with the ball? By everybody's estimation, the ball was different last year, and it was flying out of the parks at an unprecedented rate. So you expect them to adjust back a bit, or what do you think?
I don't think they have any control over it. I don't think last year what happened was deliberate. I think it just happened. But I think if you ask me what's the number one story in 2020, it's clearly the Astros and all the fallout. But the number two story we're all going to be talking about is the ball. I mean, are we going to have all these home runs again this year? So who knows? Nobody knows what's going to go on with the ball.
David, great stuff, man.
Baseball, all these things that happen in baseball, they just keep punching themselves in the face sometimes.
Yeah, they're kind of getting in their own way. That'd be nice if they could figure something out. But makes for a good conversation. We really appreciate you taking time with us. And everybody go to ESPN.com, check out what Dave's written about. Each team's got a number that means something to each team. So it's a really good read. David, we look forward to talking to you again, man. Thanks so much.
All right. Yep. Thanks for having me, guys.
There you go. David Schoenfeld of ESPN.com. He made Jim feel better for a minute.
He's fantastic.
I like that.
Well, I think he's a I don't know if he's still a Mariner fan, but growing up here, I think
sure there's a soft spot in his heart. Coming up, Jim is going to abandon the listeners for a country music show in a bar somewhere, and you guys can just deal without him, is pretty much what he's saying. We're also going to continue on our Seahawks top 10 free agent list. We've been breaking them down each day, whether they stay, whether they go. We're up to number 3 on the list. We're going to do that next with Bob, Dave, and more. Really, just Bob and Dave. Coming up next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Should they stay or should they go? This is what we've been doing every day here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. Right now it's just Bob and Dave because Jim has just cast you all aside. Said, you know what? I don't need to do this anymore. I got a show to go to. I got country music to listen to. So tough luck, listeners.
Yeah, it must be nice to have that kind of cachet where you can just leave whenever you want.
Yeah, whenever you want. Whenever you want.
I don't really feel like doing the last part of the show.
Guys, so I'm going to tap out at 5:30.
Yeah.
I got better things to do. But we've been every day taking a look at the Seahawks free agent. We narrowed down the list to 10. There are more than 10 free agents, but we went with the top 10, worked our way up from number 10. We're at number 3 now. Wonder who the other two are, Dave. We'll get into that.
I'll bet you Clowney's one of them, but I'm not sure.
You never know. You never know. But today we're looking at Michael Kendricks, a guy who, in my opinion, when he came over, he fit right in. I thought there'd be a ramp-up period where he had to get used to just, the cohesive nature, just trying to develop a chemistry with Bobby and just the lingo and how they play their defense. And he looked like he'd been in it the whole time. It was, to me, really amazing how quickly he fit in. Now, today, you and I were looking at plays, and you were pointing out some things to me that didn't sell me on him that much. And so it was one game. It was just one game, first game of the season. But this is a guy coming off an ACL. He had some hamstring issues as well, and we still have no idea what's going to happen with his legal issues. I don't think he's going to serve any time. But
I don't either.
Where are you at with him in terms of how he fits and how crucial he is to what they are trying to do moving forward?
Yeah, I know Jim Moore did not leave because he pooped his pants 360. Okay.
Dave likes to say caked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I I like him a lot. I think he's good to have on your team. It's amazing the number of times that they ran that base defense. And a lot of times, you know, it was mostly they ran like a zone coverage behind it, because you can do that because you don't get caught in a mismatch. You're getting help from other players. In other words, when you run a zone, you're not just man-to-man following the guy all over the place. And that would be a mismatch, because if you put him on a receiver, he's going to get beat.
Yeah.
He's fast, but he's not that fast. So, but yeah, I like him a lot. I think he's a good pass rusher. Would he end up with 3 sacks?
Yeah, I'd have to look. I think so.
Because I remember they were talking about, well, if he gets one more, he's going to be their leading sacker. That was at the end of the year. It ended up being Rasheem Green. But, you know, I really was impressed by the – it's just one play, but still, the way he read that RPO in Atlanta and got an interception, I thought was really good. And he's been a pretty sure tackler. But, you know, just kind of going through and looking at film before, and I got through one quarter because I'm looking at everybody.
Yeah, let's tell people what we're kind of working on, a new project. We need to come up with a name for it, and we'll get back to this in a moment.
But not Sackstravaganza.
You already did Sackstravaganza parts 1, 2, 3, and was there 4?
Yeah.
Yeah, part 4. So that was a 4-part miniseries. We're going to start a new one where you're going to isolate a specific player that there's a lot of conversation around, and we'll just throw out Michael Kendricks for one, or Trey Flowers, where you're going to isolate them and go through the season and look at how they played and see if the opinion that's out there on these guys matches what you see on film, or perhaps after further investigation and just isolating their plays throughout every game, you come to a different conclusion. So we need to come up with a name for that segment, because I think it'll be very educational.
Yeah, maybe it'd be something like, it's not what you think.
There you go.
Or how about this? I've seen this bumper sticker. Don't believe everything you think.
Yeah. Well, and you showed me a couple plays where I said, on this play, if you asked me who's at fault here, I'm looking at this player right here, and I'd be dead wrong.
Yeah. It was Trey Flowers.
It was Trey Flowers. And I said, if you asked 10 people to watch this play and say, tell me who screwed up here, all 10 would say, oh, that's Trey.
Right.
You know, so it's very deceptive when you don't fully understand what's happening in a specific play. But anyway, back to Kendricks. Here's Pete Carroll, by the way, after the Cleveland game, Pete has been singing his praises since the day he got here.
I really love the way he plays. You know, you've seen that we've left him on the field a lot in three receiver situations because he's such a good athlete and we can put him out in the slot. I think yesterday, you know, going back home for him, it was a big deal, you know, and he handled it beautifully and played great and all that. But you saw him make tackles in the open field for like no gains, you know, 1 and 2 yard gains on passes that were completed, because he's a bigger, stronger guy than the nickel guys are. So, his impact has been obvious. He's been a good pressure guy. He hasn't always gotten the sacks, but he's made good things happen when we bring him off the edge.
So there he is singing the praises of Kendricks after the Cleveland game.
That's good enough for me. Listening to Pete talk about him, I totally agree. I feel like he's got the best connection to the ground of anybody. Like, he's never off his feet. He's kind of like a cat, you know, like he scrambles a lot, but he doesn't ever go down to a knee or anything. He's so low. He plays really low, and that's so important. You know, you always hear me rave about Sam Mills.
Yep.
Who's a linebacker who unfortunately passed away from cancer. This is back in maybe 2004, 2005, but he was my hero when I was watching film in the NFL, and whenever we played them, I would always be watching him. I mean, but he was 5'10", 5'9", and his leverage it was killer. I mean, it was the reason why he was such a good player, and Kendricks has that. Is that similar type of connection, like I said, with the ground, the leverage, everything is, yeah, he's very good hitter, good tackler. So, yeah, I think you bring him back. They did some weird things in the first game, and I was just looking at the first game of Cincinnati where they were leaving linebackers out there and they were taking linemen off the field. They had 3 or 4 different times just in the first quarter alone where they had a 3-3-5, basically. It was, you know, they were playing nickel.
Well, we saw that play where Puna Ford was in coverage.
Yeah, and I think that was one of them where
I'm like, what the heck is?
Well, and that's called a zone blitz. So basically what you're doing is, and this is what Pittsburgh thrives at. They have that 3-4, and they'll have some guys, and these guys can drop. I'm not a fan of dropping defensive linemen into coverage. I mean, there's a surprise factor there that screws up the blocking, and that's why they do it.
Right.
They do it because, you know, you see a D lineman, you think, okay, this guy's coming here, I'm going to take him, this guy's going to take him. All of a sudden, he drops back, and now you have to rethink it. So that's, I think, why you run a zone blitz. But the problem is you get a defensive lineman who's not good at pattern progressing and getting back into a zone, and we saw him, Puna Ford, and Michael Kendricks did it too, so I think he does make some mistakes, but they both chased a guy out of a zone, and they left their zone wide open where a 13-yard pass was caught. So, you know, I did see a few mistakes out of Kendricks, but that was also game one, and I think overall he was really did a great job. The other thing I came, by the way, and this is I came to the conclusion of, KJ Wright had a very good year, and I thought that, and I, you know, didn't really go back and look at every single play. I just noticed him during games. And then in this game, I'm so impressed with him. His open field tackling, he does a great job in coverage. He can still run. And I know a lot of people are saying, well, he's lost a step. I don't think so, man. I think KJ he's improved almost over the last couple of years. He's looked really good. So, but no, I'm keeping Michael Kendricks. I just think he's too valuable. He can rush the passer. We saw him get a pick. His brother is the best pass playing linebacker in the NFL. So
can we get him?
Yeah, he's got good lineage.
All right, so we're both in on Michael Kendricks. Jim, what do you think? All right. Coming up next, what should the punishment be for these Houston Astros? A lot of people talking punishment that should be in place. We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app, powered by Dubin Law Group. So we've talked quite a bit today about this whole Astros thing and people texting in, how come the players have been punished and they should do this and they should do that? Well, for those that don't know, the players cut a deal with the commissioner. They were granted immunity if they cooperated with the investigation, meaning they wouldn't be punished and they will not be punished and haven't been punished, which, even though you know that, still really annoys the hell out of me that these guys are the perpetrators. They got together, whether the front office is the one that initiated it, whatever. They're the ones that carried out the plan. Yet they reap the benefits. They won a World Series. They got their World Series share. They got the glory. They got everything that came with being a World Series champion. They have not been fined a dollar. They will not serve a single game of suspension. This is their punishment in the eye. And I know Mike Salk was on with the guys earlier in the afternoon saying, well, their punishment is Wikipedia will now have a notation in there basically saying, you know, that they cheated or they did this. I don't feel like that's a big punishment. I'm sorry. That's not good enough.
Well, Bob, I happen to feel that the Astros have been punished enough and that we should just leave them alone. Your thoughts on that?
Wrong. Wrong. I couldn't disagree with you more.
I just, to me, the most striking thing was today, and a guy on CBS Sports, and I don't know who this guy is. He was wearing a crushed velvet jacket, first of all. And, you know, he was saying something.
Why was he being punished?
Yeah. He chose that. You could tell. But, you know, he was talking about maybe they should have done it more in a more formal manner. Kind of agree with that, because wasn't it done like outside on, it looked like it was on a picnic table.
Yeah, it was out of their spring training.
Yeah, and everybody's just facility. Kind of in shorts and t-shirts, and then there was no apology. There was not one. The only thing I've heard that's good and that I think it was contrite, apologetic, was from AJ Hinch. And, you know, he seemed to really get it and understand the gravity of what that cheating scandal was about. The owner doesn't. The players don't seem to. Jose Altuve, a little bit. I know we have some sound from that, but, man, Kent Bregman, to me, that guy did not sound apologetic. No. And I just feel like it's not that hard to apologize sincerely. Just put your heart into it. Don't ever read an apology. Ever.
Yeah, unless you've got people that you want to isolate and say, I apologize to this specific group or this person, and you don't want to forget it. Okay.
Well, if it's a long list of...
Yeah, yeah, that I get. But if you need bullet points to say, you know what, man, we screwed up. Yeah. We got caught up in this thing, and it got away from us, and I don't have an excuse. I understand why people are upset, and hopefully they can find it within their hearts to forgive me and my teammates at some point down the line, but I think their anger is justified, and I get it. See? Top of my head. How tough was that?
Yeah, you just right there. Yeah, I mean, and look, it wasn't that difficult to do, but 509, great idea. They should have to put an asterisk on their jerseys.
Yeah, something. There should be something that falls upon their shoulders. They carried this out. They benefited from it. They gained financially. They gained in stature. I'm sure business was booming in terms of merchandise being sold. Their dopey owner that comes out and says, I don't think it really helped. I don't think it really impacted the game. What in the holy hell are you talking about, man? You did it for a season and a half because it didn't work, because it had no impacts, and then you got these bogus apologies, and then they opened up a little bit when they got into the locker room. Here's Altuve on whether they knew what they were doing was wrong.
Jose, 2017.
Yeah.
Did you guys know what you were doing was wrong?
Yeah, kind of. You know, and that's why we feel bad. And, you know, I'm not going to say to you that it was good. It was wrong. You know, like, we feel bad. We feel remorse. Like I said, the impact in our fans, the impact in the game. You know, we feel bad.
I would say take away the impact of the fans and it's cheating.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what it is. And I don't, we've talked about this before. I don't know anywhere in sports where you would gain a bigger advantage from cheating than in this situation. Knowing which pitch is going to come, because we talked about this with football. You know, the big mystery is whether it's a run or a pass, which is why Salk's idea of having dedicated offensive linemen for run and pass,
rotating them,
is so bad. But yeah.
He doesn't think so. I convened with him today.
Of course not.
He didn't agree.
Yeah, but, you know, look, knowing what pitch is going to come, we talked to Shannon Dreher about it. You know, it's not just which one's coming, you know, which ones to lay off of. How many times, and I've said this a million times, how many times do you see a really good hitter who gets out in front of a changeup and
totally
just gets
fooled?
Totally fooled. And as we heard from Marco, that, you know, Marco Gonzalez, that's his whole game. That's what it's about. So I can't think of even knowing a play is coming in football. You know, there's not a bigger mystery in any of the sports other than that. Maybe like a soccer, you know, when they do the sudden death, kicking the ball.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
kick the, you know, they kick the ball.
The penalty kicks or whatever. Or
there, whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you know which way that's coming, you can, you know, you're kind of guessing as the goalkeeper there. But
pitching is based on deception.
Right.
They're trying to deceive you. They're trying to make you think they're going to throw a fastball and then they throw the changeup, or they're going to throw it low and away and they come up and in. The entire philosophy behind pitching is deception, especially when you don't throw 98. And we talked about Dusty Baker. Here he is saying, you know, he's hoping people can forgive the players.
And I just want to ask for, you know, the world, the baseball world, you know, to forgive them for the mistakes that they've made. And we're looking forward to an excellent season this year in a great town. That's a great baseball town. And we want to bring a championship back.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the 253, deflated balls are really bad. There's no question about that. But as far as the scandal with the Patriots,
this is
totally ridiculous.
This is 10 times worse.
Oh, my gosh.
This is 10 times worse. And as far as what should – we've heard people saying, well, they should strip them of the World Series title. I've never been a fan of that. I don't – the game still took place. A team still won. We can say, well, it was they won under, you know, ugly circumstances. But what are you going to do? Say, well, now the champions are the Dodgers. Or now – you know, it's like stripping titles in the NCAA. Like, we all watched the game. We saw that Michigan won, or we saw that this team won. You're going to pull a banner down, and that makes us forget?
I tend to think that's silly. The same thing, didn't that happen with Reggie Bush? Did they vacate his Heisman? I think
they vacated their title, the USC.
Right. It's silly to me. It's already happened. We all saw it happen. But going forward, you know, I feel like there should be fines. I feel like there should be suspensions. It was kind of interesting to hear from Altuve there. I felt like he was a little bit more honest about it, you know, and it was a good question. Did you know that what you were doing was wrong? Because if that's the case and you did it anyway, then there's not much you can say other than try to really apologize and say, in the future, this is not going to be happening.
Well, as we heard Schoenfeld say, the investigation into the Red Sox continues. So this story's not going away.
Where there'll be some conclusion with Boston, where Alex Cora was part of the proceedings and he was part of this as well. So the story is far from over. Meanwhile, we'll talk some NFL. The professor, John Clayton, will join us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
What did we learn today, Moore, outside of the fact that Jim Moore has got no care, concern whatsoever for our listeners? That everything else in life is more important than this show.
He's the Houston Astros of this show.
That's exactly right. Just no concern. Doesn't even realize he's doing wrong. It's lost on him.
Or doesn't care. Even worse.
That's right.
I like that he's probably still going to be stuck in traffic listening to this.
Good. Good.
That's right.
Enjoy this segment, Jim.
Yeah. We learned that Jim recognizes a good read when he hears one.
We as a team are totally focused on moving forward to the 2020 season. Thank you.
He sounds like me doing an ad read. I mean, come on.
He's actually pretty accurate.
Yeah,
true. Well, the one thing about Jim, though, since we're ripping him, he screams.
He talks really loud when he's doing his reads.
So he has the headphones on in there, and Bob and I are trying to have like a whispering conversation. And
I said it to Dave yesterday. I go, he talks really loud in these spots here. He's over there promoting whatever.
Screaming.
Bee venom cream is what you need when you're stung by a bee. Yeah, he's very loud.
You know what's funny about that, though, too? Bregman, don't you get the sense that he read thank you?
Yes.
He read that, too. He read everything.
I'd like it if he stumbled
down
on that.
Down to the last drop, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. You.
I think I heard the morning show bringing up this morning that he sounded more sincere when he apologized for taking his bat with him to first base. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
He sounded more sincere
in
that apology.
Is he the one that did that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, he did. But not this.
What else did we learn?
We learned how John Clayton really feels about country music.
Professor, Jim Moore is leaving the show early to go to a country western concert.
Oh, my God.
Your thoughts?
I want to throw up.
So graphic.
Wow. Sounds like he did.
Man, he's got some venom for country music. I don't love country music. I'm not that adamant, but
when I used to produce his show, it was like a thing. People would text every day. Yeah. Would you rather go to a country music concert or be eaten by a zombie? And he'd be like, eaten by a zombie.
Of course, the zombie, I at least wouldn't have to hear some bad music. I would just be eaten alive.
That is the one thing I appreciate about Clayton is that, like, if you ask him what kind of cereal, popsicles, whatever, he'll be like, well, of course, you know, you've got your cherry, and it's one of the more, you know, 30% of people will, you know, and then the Captain Crunch, I mean, it's going to hurt the roof of your mouth, so.
He'll put serious thought into it, just an inane question.
He's analyzing it.
What else did we learn?
Well, Bob, we learned that you made Wyman very proud.
All right, so we're both in on Michael Kendricks. Jim, what do you think? All right. Coming up next.
It's a very mature show today.
I told Bob it's the most immature thing I've ever heard him do, and it's also the funniest.
It was his proudest moment. He was very proud of me right there.
He really was.
Jim, it's just going to get worse and worse for him.
Yeah, well, and you know, when you're on vacation, you got one coming up, he'll take shots at you, then I'll take one eventually, and he'll rip me, and more if you're late. Oh, well, he's already had his fun with you every time you're not there. Exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. This used to really get to Jess, but he would text every once in a while. She's like, oh, there's traffic on 90. I can't get down to the VMAC in time. And Jim would text in a really serious manner. You know, you probably should have left earlier. Or things like that, and Jess would just come unglued. And some of her responses were, I can't say them, and they're hilarious.
Well, the thing is, he's saying you should have left earlier, like we're leaving from our house. We're leaving from the station working to get the show ready. Yeah. So,
But he would still say that you should have left the station earlier.
This is where people don't realize that Jim is the biggest instigator. He loves taking shots at people. It gives him such a thrill.
Yeah.
Well, but he's really good at playing the victim if we do it to him.
Oh, yeah. Poor Jim. But, yeah, this is also an opportunity when he will say, why are we talking about Jim? You know what? I'm going to shut up right now. No, but he'll usually go, yo, I don't care if anybody thinks it's funny. I think it's funny. So that's all that matters. I'm like, yeah, see, that's where the problem
You're
lies.
Doing it wrong.
Yeah, he's doing it wrong.
Doing it wrong.
We love you, Jim. Have fun tonight.
Yeah, enjoy the concert.
Hey, Jim. There, that's for you.
Do a little line dancing for us. Yeah. Anything else we learned?
Nope. That's all we learned.
That's it. That's all the learning we did today. All right. Thanks to our guests today, John Clayton and David Schoenfeld, for joining us on the program. That was good stuff. So if you missed any of that, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Just click the podcast button and then scroll down and click on our picture. It's right there for you each and every day. We're back tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Does he come down with it? Does Golden Tate have it? He's in the end zone. He has it.